Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
What if the child everyone believes is gone might still be alive? On this episode of This Week in America, I talk with acclaimed author Carol Snow about her gripping new psychological thriller, The Girl on the Beach. A beautiful beach house, a wealthy family, a four-year-old girl who disappears into the Pacific Ocean without a trace. Months later, the family's former nanny returns to the scene of the tragedy and sees a child who looks exactly like the missing girl. Was Roxy taken? Was the truth hidden? Or can grief make us see things that aren't there? Carol takes readers deep into a suspenseful world of guilt, secrets, trauma, and memory, where every answer raises a new question, and the final twist will leave you stunned. Carol is the author of 10 novels, known for her sharp insight into human behavior. She's been recognized by Booklist as an author to watch. With a background in psychology from Brown University and an MA in teaching English from Boston College, she brings a deep understanding of emotions and language to her work. And Carol Snow, author of The Girl on the Beach, is our guest on This Week in America. Carol, welcome to the program. A pleasure to have you with us.
It's good to be here, Rick. Thank you for having me.
I loved what you've done in this story and really looking forward to our conversation. In the book, The Girl on the Beach, it opens with, well, every parent's worst nightmare, a child disappearing in an instant. But what makes the story so unsettling is that nobody, including the nanny herself, seems completely sure what really happened. When you first imagined this story, what was the psychological question you most wanted to explore? Was there one question that sort of led to this writing the story?
The story actually came to me initially as an image of a young woman is on a beach, and in a distance she sees a child, and the beach is deserted, and she sees this child, and she's shocked because she knows that this child has, you know, when I was starting, it was like the child was, it was supposed to be dead or had been abducted. I didn't really know. But it was, I think, starting with the emotion. I have two kids that are grown now. But it's kind of this fear. Once you have children, you're terrified that something is going to happen to them. And I always knew it was not a mother seeing the child, but that was sort of the question of, like, what happened? And, you know, just the dealing with the loss and the grief, and where do you go from there?
Well, it's so layered. You have so many themes that you bring out in the book. The book is The Girl on the Beach. Carol Snow is the author. Now, the book's available, I think, June 25th, something like that, but you could pre-order
June 23rd.
June 23rd. Yep. Yeah, they moved it up 2 days. That's good. June 23rd. They can't wait for it either. You can buy it and pre-order it now, and you'll get all the information at Carol's website, carolsnow.com. We've got all that on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Tell me about the main characters in the book, the family. And if you had to choose two words, probably wealth and privilege would describe the family you're writing about here. Talk about the main characters.
The story centers around a couple named the stars of Sonia and Graham. And Sonia is a serial entrepreneur, very driven. And her husband he's an oil painter, and he loves life. He's sort of the fun guy. He's the fun dad. And they live in Montecito, California, which is a very it's a beautiful area of the world. It's called the American Riviera. In that part, like near Santa Barbara, the mountains meet the sea. It's these Spanish style architecture going up the hills. And they have a main house in Montecito, and then they have a beach house on the ocean, 15 minutes away, which, believe it or not, is not unheard of in that part of the world. It's very, very wealthy. So it centers on them, their daughter, Roxy, who was this very precocious, sort of intense little girl. She's four. And then their babysitter, Colleen. And so everything seems very perfect. Their life had seemed very perfect until, of course, the most horrific thing that can happen happens, and everything falls apart.
You bring the characters alive. You also bring that area of Santa Barbara alive, too. You're reading that. You can't help be overcome with, wow, that's got to be a vacation point here at some point. If I ever win the lottery, that would be a nice place to to go hang out. And that's almost part of the story, isn't it? Almost a character in the story.
Very much so. It's a part of the world I love. It's just, it's almost impossibly beautiful. It's the weather is sort of perfect. It can, if anything, it can be a little chilly at the beach, but it's just, it's a Mediterranean climate. There are, it smells like flowers. There's just all kinds of plants everywhere. Farmers markets, people are, you know, beautiful people. Everyone's happy because, you know, you're there. Why wouldn't you be? But what one thing that fascinated, that drew me to that location for this particular story was that it seems so perfect, which as a human, I fully embrace a place that seems too perfect. As a novelist, I think, okay, if something seems too perfect, what's behind the facade?
Yes.
And so there was a parallel between that and also the family. They seem very perfect on the surface. Like, wow, everyone's dream life, living, you know, these glamorous jobs and living in this glamorous place, and aren't they perfect? And then as the story goes on, you know, you naturally see that they've got the certain facade that they've been presenting to the world, but really what's going on behind that for them as well.
It's interesting because that wealth and privilege I talked about, that sort of played into how the case was handled, didn't it? I mean, that really had an impact on how the whole thing unfolded.
Yeah, I think it did because, and I think that's realistic. If people are wealthier or more privileged, the police maybe don't ask as many questions.
Yes.
And they're given a lot of sort of distance from there is a little press coverage of this horrific case, but not too much. There's sort of an understanding, like, these poor people don't make this any worse than it already has to be, which, you know, is a courtesy that should be extended to everyone. But at the same time, yeah, the police don't ask a lot of questions that maybe they should be asking.
The book is The Girl on the Beach. Carol Snow, the author, is our guest on the program. Her website is carolsnow.com. Book available, it will be available wherever books are sold. Once you get everything together for the story, you've got the parents, you've fleshed out the characters, you decide to pursue it from the perspective of the nanny rather than the parents. Talk about that, a unique way of presenting it, and really an effective way of presenting it.
It was always, as I mentioned, there was this image that I had. So at a certain level, that was the story I was trying to figure out. Who is this young woman? Who is this child? What happened? But beyond that, what I wanted to do was present this, you know, again, this apparently, you know, this perfect family, this perfect place, and then what lies behind it. And what I found most compelling to pursue there was putting the narrator essentially in the reader's position of seeing this and being immersed in it. You know, it sounds, and I hope listeners don't hear this, the premise of the story, and think, oh, this sounds really depressing, I don't want to read it, because there's a lot of kind of fun that's going on too. The reader gets to also sort of go into this world that these people are living. And along with the nanny, the cracks start to appear in the facade. So there, it sort of starts with a more almost wide angle lens approaching the family, and then you learn more and more about it. Whereas if you're starting from within the family, they have their own secrets, and you know, that's also, there are plenty of stories that do that and do that effectively, but I was more interested in approaching it from a wide angle lens and then saying, okay, what's really going on with these people?
And just when you think maybe you've got it figured out, Carol goes, no, not quite so fast. I'm going to read the next page and you'll find out you don't have it figured out yet. The book does a great job of holding your attention all the way to the end and then sort of slapping you at the end like, wow, I didn't see that. So the book is available, will be, wherever books are sold. The Girl on the Beach, Carol Snow, the author, our guest on the program. Let's talk a little bit about what happened, how Roxy disappeared, and what happened after that, because it never really seemed to make a lot of sense, did it?
Well, after, I mean, she, then what is very kind of off, which again, as you brought up, you know, the police didn't pursue this, but the nanny was in the house, the parents were in the house, and the little girl was left watching her iPad and unsupervised, and ran out the back door. There was an alarm on the door, but it was turned off at this point. Ran out and was seen running, you know, along the beach. And then there was, she had this like a floaty, like a little inflatable toy. And that was, people saw like a head in the inflatable, and then they just found the raft. So it's this question of, there were three adults there who should be supervising her, and they weren't. And why weren't they? What was going on?
Yeah, blame is something that they all deal with. And you as a reader, like, okay, the point you just made, somebody should have caught that three adults there, and she gets out. And we learned early on, Roxy really didn't like the waves and wouldn't go into the water without her dad being there. So that really seemed unlikely, didn't it, that she just went off on her own and decided to go into the water?
Yes, absolutely. And the book is told in dual perspectives. There's the before, which starts when the family, the previous summer, the family's arriving at the beach house. Everything is super fun. And then there's the after, in the same place, where the nanny, months after this incident, the nanny comes back, really to kind of try to deal with her emotions, to try to move on. She doesn't she's just tormented by this. And so there's these dual perspectives where she's coming back and trying to make sense of what happened. And the parents aren't really asking the questions. The mother throws herself into work and the father just wallows. And it's really the nanny's dealing with her guilt, because they're all dealing with guilt in different ways. That, you know, again, the mother just wants to drown herself in work and not think about it. The father just falls apart and says, you know, this is just awful. And the nanny is dealing with her guilt by just being driven to solve the puzzle, to get answers, because she feels like then she can move on.
You talk about maybe the dual timeline. Talk about writing that. This is so fascinating the way you do this. But as a writer, how do you plot all of that out? You're writing past, you're writing present, you're tying everything together. In addition to that, you've got all these multi-layered characters, and that's unfolding as we go through the book. How difficult was it? How challenging was it to do the dual timeline?
I mean, writing is always challenging, and so I would never say, you know, oh, it just fell into place. I write my draft linearly, although writing as a process is very circular. You make discoveries, then you have to go back and change things. But this being a thriller, it was very plot driven. So I had to know what the ending was. I had to know what the big twist was, and then I reverse engineered. And from that, initially the before and after perspectives were roughly the same length. And the book, my initial draft came in really too long. And what I did to trim it down, and I think it strengthened the book, was that the after, when she's going back, that's, you know, I think of it as the light and the dark also. So you can't, if you have all light, they kind of need to balance each other. So in the after, it's in the same place, but a very different mood and a different time of year. So everything is sort of dark then. And that's where she's investigating things and asking questions. And then the before narrative essentially serves as a flashback. And so it's asking the questions and then looking for answers in the flashback, essentially. So it worked together. I was able to do it linearly in terms of writing it.
One of the many themes that you bring up there is trust. And Colleen goes through that. She thought she could trust the family. Now that trust is in doubt, and is her memory. Can I trust my memory? Talk about that. I guess the psychological background that you've had comes into play in developing these characters. You touch on some real issues that we all struggle with from time to time, don't we?
Yeah, studies that have been done show that memory is not really reliable. And every time you try to, if you just in our normal course of life, if you remember an incident, something from your past, every time you open that, every time you remember something, you actually corrupt the file. Because just by thinking about it, sometimes you delete things, sometimes you add things. And so our memories are really notoriously inaccurate, and also emotional states deeply affect memory. So if you're in one emotional state, you're more apt to remember things if you are in the same emotional state. And also trauma is a, you know, trauma really kind of fries your memory as well. And so this, you know, it's this huge thing that happened. And yeah, the nanny is trying to, you know, she's wrestling with her role in it. And was she, you know, was she to blame, essentially? And so she keeps trying to go back and remember what happened and then talk to, you know, the couple that she'd worked for, who now they really don't want to talk to her, or their memories aren't that reliable either. And so she's trying to make sense of the incident by not only through her own memory, but by talking to the couple as well. And, you know, putting those three perspectives together.
We learn so much as the story goes on with all the different people, the background and what happened. How do you go about releasing that information? You don't give us a lot. You give us just little bits and pieces, and then we just try to tie it all together. How do you decide, like, okay, that's enough for now? Let's go. I'll come back to this in chapter 12, but I'm going to move on now. How do you decide how to distribute that?
A lot of that is done in the revision process. It's for not even just thrillers, but in fiction in general, if you're given all the information summarized in chapter one, there's really no point to reading the rest of the book. I was very conscious of wanting to have various reveals, like so that the reader trying to figure things out, having some clues, and then it's like, oh, that's what's going on. Oh, that's what's going on. I feel like that's what I owe my readers, is to keep them, you know, keep the pages turning. But a lot of that in terms of how I do it from a craft perspective is through doing it as best as I can in my initial draft. And this thing, I don't even know how many drafts I went through here. It was so many, I don't want to even revisit that. But it's kind of almost looking for a rhythm, and the beats of the revelations kind of come. And so often a lot of that is in the editing and saying, okay, I'm giving away too much too soon, or I wanted to build some tension, so let's hint at this but not give it away yet. So that's more of a conscious, like a big picture consciousness after the draft is done, to space them out enough to keep the reader engaged.
Well, the rhythm is perfect. It makes for an excellent read. The book is The Girl on the Beach. The book will be available June 23rd. You can pre-order now wherever books are sold. If they, you know, ask for it, get on the list so you'll have it. And at Carol's website, all the information on this book and the others that we'll talk about that Carol has written available on her website. Her name, carolsnow.com. How did this book change? Did this book change from beginning to end? When you started this, did it end up the way you thought it was going to, or did it take a few twists and turns on its own during the course of writing it?
Well, I'm glad you used the word twist. When I first started writing it, I had the basic concept, and I wrote, I don't know, maybe a couple chapters, probably three chapters, and did a synopsis, and I sent them to my agent. And I said, what do you think of this? Do you think this is a viable idea? She liked it, but she had some questions. And one was about motivation, a certain character's motivation. I don't want to give anything away. And I thought, okay, that's a good point, because I think as a writer, I don't have a lot of interest in characters that are all good or all bad. I want sort of shades of gray, and why are people acting in a certain way? So I thought, okay, that's a good question about motivation. And just that question, which again, I don't want to give away the twist. If I give away the twist, then no one's going to, you know, want to read the book. but her asking that question sparked something in my, I was actually walking on the beach, and I thought, oh, what about this as a twist? And I went back and I immediately wrote to my agent. I'm like, what do you think about this? And she's like, oh, yeah. And I wasn't sure if I could pull it off. So that was, I was worried about that. But and that it took a few revisions to make that work, the kind of the reveal of what the twist is. But that was a, once I realized that, I had to go back to the beginning and start again, because then I had to sort of prepare for this thing. And again, it did take a lot of revisions to make it work. But I when I really dove into writing, I knew the twist and I knew the ending. So I was writing towards those goals, although I still, you know, I did have to rewrite a lot.
You know, you said something interesting as you're walking on the beach, you're thinking of the book and you come up with this idea. From a reader standpoint, we don't want to put the book down. We should sleep tonight. I get by in 3 hours if I have to. I'm going to read a few more chapters. From your standpoint, from the author standpoint, how difficult is it just to shut down? And it's like, okay, I have real life. I need to go do some things here. I would think rather than writer's block, you've got maybe from time to time a hard time just shutting the characters off. I mean, you've created an intricate plot line. You've got well-developed characters, so many great themes that you're touching upon. I would think it'd be tough to turn that off and just go, okay, I'm going to watch TV for a couple hours.
I don't know. I think I've been just been doing this for so long that I'm used to it. I also kind of, I sort of live in my head a lot. There's a lot of, it's very, very noisy in there. So if the noise from the book isn't there, there's noise from life. There's noise from, and writing is, it's mentally very taxing. It's sort of exhausting. That I always find myself snacking, partly just because like it's like I can't come up with the next word. I'm gonna go see what's in the cabinet.
Yes.
But I think there's also like a need for glucose in the brain a little bit. so I, you know, sometimes it would just be this delight to write it, and sometimes it was work. I mean, writing is always work, but it would be there in the back of my mind, so I would sort of enjoy it when I was thinking about it. But yeah, I don't think about it all the time, but it's there in the back. So if things remind me of it, it's kind of fun to just have these characters in my head. I actually don't like it when I'm not working on a book. Like right now I'm trying to figure out what to write next. And I like having something cooking on the back burner in my brain.
I was going to ask you, what are you working on? And you're still trying, it sounds like, to figure out exactly what you are working on next.
Yeah, right now I'm sort of focusing on what was going to be my first psychological thriller, and I did write a full draft, and it was honestly a hot mess, I think because I hadn't written thrillers before, and I just went off in too many tangents. So I'm revisiting a book, which and kind of figuring out how to make it work, but I haven't sort of jumped into it yet. It's about a woman who whose marriage has just fallen apart, and she is trying to reconnect with her high school boyfriend through Facebook. But there was a girl was murdered in their high school, and there's questions about what actually went on, you know, many years ago. So that's kind of what's cooking, but not cooking as much as I'd like it to be right now. So
well, hopefully
I'm focused
will.
Right now on the girl on the beach. So I, you know, once this is out in the world, I'm going to put more energy into that.
Well, isn't it like a great story idea you've got coming up? And you mentioned the other books, and you can find out all of the books that Carol has written by going to our website, carolsnow.com. Of course, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all of the usual places to find the books. From young adult to writing thrillers, what was this transition like? How difficult was it to make that genre jump?
It was, well, as I just said, with the first time I tried to make the genre jump, it was quite difficult because, I mean, obviously plot is always important in any novel, but I was able to be a little bit looser in my approach previously, where I would know the ending. I would know I could wing it a little bit, and they were a little bit more voice driven, a little, you know, this is, you know, more, I mean, hopefully this is very entertaining too, but more about getting a laugh. And I tried to do that initially, being a little bit loose in my approach. And I just kind of, it just went off the rails. It just like, there were too many subplots. And after I'd done it, I realized, okay, this is where I went wrong. So I learned from that experience. And so on this one, I knew I had to plot. So it's, a lot of it is similar, you know, the discipline of it and the revising, and I've been doing that for years, but this took a lot more focus on really, really, really knowing the plot points before I got going. And still things change, and still there's always discoveries as you write. You can't, know exactly how things are going to play out, and you get more ideas as you write. But a twist, to have the ending, I had to be much more methodical than I had been in the past.
One reviewer said Carol Snow wrote a psychological thriller that will keep your brain busy long after you've turned the last page. And I think that's true as well. Was that the intent in the beginning, that here's something that I think people will enjoy even after they've finished reading the book?
I mean, that's always a goal. So I was very glad to hear that I succeeded this time.
Well, you did. And the book is doing well in previews. The book will be available for sale starting on June 23rd, available at all of the usual places. Why do you think readers are so drawn to stories about disappearance, unresolved truths, true crime, that type of thing that seems to be a major genre unto itself? Why do you think that is? Why are we fascinated by that?
I think it's a couple of things. I think one of it is that humans are just sort of programmed to try to figure out puzzles. Like we don't like mysteries, or we like to untangle mysteries. I think it gives us a certain sense of control. And also with control, there's fear. It's by following stories. There's things like, you know, the idea of a child going missing. That's for any parent, that's terrifying. And I don't think, my children are grown now. If I had a young child, I don't think I could have written the story. It would have been too upsetting even to conceive of it. But by addressing these kinds of topics in fiction or true crime, you know, it's not true, you know, it's not happening to us. It's a way of facing something that is very terrifying, but doing it with enough distance that we can process it and look at it.
Well, if you love psychological thrillers filled with tension, motion, shocking revelations, all of that and more, this is the book for you. The Girl on the Beach. Carol Snow is the author, our guest on the program. Our website is carolsnow.com. Book available after June 23rd, on June 23rd, actually, at all of the usual places. You can pre-order now as well. Carol, excellent job on the book. I really appreciate you taking time to talk about it. Thank you for being with us on the program, and congratulations in advance for a super job you've done with The Girl on the Beach.
Thank you, Rick. I so appreciate you having me on.
Well, a pleasure to talk with you. And again, the book, The Girl on the Beach, you'll find it wherever books are sold, June 23rd and beyond. Like on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Carol's website is carolsnow.com. You're listening to This Week in America, and you can find us on 28 podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, and many more, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, and many others. While you're there, like, comment, and subscribe for more inspiring conversations like our conversation today with Carol Snow.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.